He looked at Lindy with an expression of pain, maybe even regret.
It's not the way you think. You deny you killed them?
Alex looked down. Outside, a distant voice yelled, Hey! Hey! It sounded like Ty down by the beach, as if he were trying to get someone's attention, almost as if he was hailing a boat. Too optimistic, I thought. I couldn't be that lucky. Garrett would be coming up behind me sooner or later. I didn't know how he would make it up the path, but I knew he'd try. I wanted this resolved before he got here. Unfortunately, Lindy still had his gun pointed in my direction. Lindy, I said, when your wife left you, you know where she went? His jaw clenched. That is none of your business. She left you for another man, Alex's father. She came here, to Rebel Island. Lindy's gun hand sagged. I thought about jumping him, but his expression made me hesitate. The old man looked like he was collapsing from the inside, like someone had set off a firebomb in his chest, and any second it would burn through his skin. I turned to Alex. The statue you made, that was your mother.
She died of cancer when I was young, Alex murmured. My father never got over it.
Rachel was your half-sister, I said. After the bombing, you saw her picture in the papers. You realized who she was. Alex closed his eyes tight, then he nodded. That's why you tried to turn yourself in, I said. You realized you'd killed your own sister.
No. It wasn't like that, Alex said. I didn't...
Liar! Lindy turned the gun on Alex. I tackled the old man just as he fired. Unfortunately, my balance was off. My leg was hurt and I was weak from the fall I'd taken. We both went down, and I slammed my head on the table's edge. Maybe Alex hadn't been as dazed as I thought, or maybe the adrenaline was just counteracting the booze. He bolted for the door, but Lindy was already back on his feet, blocking the way. There was only one other way for Alex to go. Up. He took the stairs as Lindy fired again. And somewhere down at the beach, I heard Ty yelling. I was staggering up the stairs as fast as I could. The 80-year-old man beat me by a mile. By the time I got to the little landing at the top of the tower, Alex Huff had realized the obvious. There was no way out, and had turned to face his accuser. Benjamin Lindy didn't try to stop me from climbing into the room. His gun was at arm's length from Alex Huff's forehead. If I tried to tackle him, if I interfered, the gun would go off. Both men were breathing hard, completely focused on one another. Out the windows, behind Alex, gray sea stretched to the horizon, and there was something startling nearby. A black boat slicing through the waves headed for the shore. It seemed impossible, an intrusion from some other world. After 24 hours of isolation, I would have been less astonished to see angels streaming from the sky.
The Coast Guard, I said.
Neither man moved.
Lindy, I said, the Coast Guard is here. They'll take Alex into custody. You tried to make a deal for your life, the old man told Alex. After all you've done... You don't understand. You contacted the marshal's office. No, I won't let you go free, Lindy promised. I won't let you just disappear.
He won't go free, I told Lindy. Not with Longoria dead. They won't make any deals with him now. Let the law handle this, Mr. Lindy. Put the gun down.
I didn't kill Rachel, Alex said.
No statement could have infuriated Lindy more.
Try an apology, the old man said. Plead for your life.
Outside, the boat bobbed closer. Several men stood at the prow. Out the opposite window, a column of smoke billowed up from the hotel, wet wood and plaster and carpet going up in a blaze.
We have to get out of here, Alex said. The rest will go soon.
He's right, I told Lindy. There's enough explosive material in the bomb room to blow up 10 hotels. It'll take out this tower.
Don't change the subject,
Lindy growled. I want to hear why you killed my Rachel. I want to hear you justify that.
Lindy, I said, he's all that's left of your wife. Let him stand trial, but don't kill him. Lindy's finger tightened on the trigger. Alex locked eyes with me. He was trying to tell me something, like a silent apology. Too late, I realized what he was going to do. He made a desperate grab for Benjamin Lindy's hand, and the gun fired. The shot pushed Alex against the window. The glass cracked under his weight, but didn't break. He slumped to the floor, holding his chest, his shirt already soaked with blood.
Go, Alex groaned. Hurry.
I knelt at his side. His face was colorless. He clutched his shirt, struggling to breathe, just like Ralph Arguello had done the night he died. I'll help you, I told him. Alex shook his head. Then he closed his eyes and didn't move again. The hotel rumbled behind us as another section collapsed into flames.
Trace!
Garrett shouted from the bottom of the stairs. I rose to face Benjamin Lindy. His face was blank, like a man who had decided his life was over.
I'm done here, he said simply, and he dropped the gun.
Garrett and Lane were waiting at the bottom of the stairs. Both looked sweaty and out of breath. Garrett was in his chair. Apparently Lane had helped him up the path.
We heard the shots, Garrett said. Where's Alex?
Upstairs, I said. I guess my tone said the rest. Garrett focused on Lindy.
You bastard.
Garrett took out the .357, Maya's gun. My luck keeping track of weapons had never been worse.
Your friend murdered my daughter, Lindy said. Do what you need to.
He didn't look concerned. He looked strangely like Alex Huff, as if he were caught in a riptide he couldn't possibly control.
He wasn't a murderer, Garrett said. He couldn't have been.
Garrett, I said, there could be more explosions. We need to get out of here.
This bastard killed Alex in cold blood.
Garrett's voice trembled.
You didn't stop him. You let him?
I wanted to protest, but he was right. After months of reliving Ralph Arguello's death, wishing I could have thrown myself in front of the gun that took my best friend's life, now another man had died the same way, right in front of me, and I hadn't been able to stop it. Garrett nodded, like he was reading my thoughts.
Well, then, don't stop me now, little bro. You just keep on being a spectator.
He raised the gun. Garrett, no! Lane stepped between him and Benjamin Lindy. She knelt down in front of Garrett so they were eye to eye.
Lane, get out of the way.
I won't.
She sounded more determined than I'd ever heard her.
You can't kill him. You're not like that.
He shot my friend.
Lane cupped her hands on his knees.
Garrett, you promised to help me. Now let me help you. We're going to go down to that boat together. No one else is going to die.
I don't need help.
Yes, you do, love.
She turned her palms up.
Give me the gun.
Garrett's face was gray with pain. He arched his back as if he were trying desperately to stand, to use the legs he'd lost 20 years ago. Then he slumped back in his chair, defeated. He dropped the gun into Lane's hands. The four of us were almost to the beach when the hotel disintegrated. Chapter 40. Calavera watched the smoke boil into the sky. Windows melted. The southwest gable collapsed with a sound like distant thunder. He couldn't enjoy the explosion. Nothing had gone right. Some had died, perhaps, he wasn't sure, but too many had gotten free. Your own fault, he chided himself. You set the explosion too late in the morning. Your will was weak. The gun felt heavy in his pocket. The solution wouldn't be so clean now, but he would have to act soon. Across the island, someone was shouting. Another wall of the house collapsed in on itself. A tongue of flame curled up the side of the roof. Soon, the only place that had ever offered him sanctuary would be a pile of rubble and ash. Maybe that's really what he'd been after with the bombs, destroying this place. He had no heart for killing anymore. But this place had let him down. He'd let himself believe he could change his life here, find peace at last. And the island had deceived him. Whether he wanted to kill or not, he had to protect his last secret. He had no choice. And so he put his hand in his pocket, felt the rough cross-hatching of the gun handle, and waited. Chapter 41. I watched the remaining palmetto trees burn. Stripped to the trunks by the storm, they leaned sideways from the wreckage of the hotel and smoldered like birthday candles on a stomped cake. The hotel had gone up in a second blast of glory, just as Alex predicted. Boards and plaster and ashes were sprayed across the dunes and against the lighthouse. The heat had cracked the tower's side. The glass top had melted and collapsed, and as we watched, the structure's cracks widened. The poor captain of the Coast Guard boat wasn't quite sure what to do with us. He was a reservist, a former merchant marine, probably, the kind of guy who knew boats and storms and preferred both to humans. From the trapped look he gave us, I thought he probably would just as soon leave us stranded and sail away. He had a crew of two, both of whom looked pale and shaken from a night riding out the storm. They had sidearms, but I doubt they'd ever used them. The captain told one of the men to radio in our situation. "A radio who, sir?" the guy wanted to know. The captain frowned impatiently. "Everyone, I guess." Maya and I sat on the beach watching the clouds break and the ruins burn. It seemed insulting that the sun should break through the clouds so brilliantly after the weekend we'd had. Gulls were starting to reappear. Sand crabs dug their way out of the surf, bubbling little geysers to clear their tunnels. The sea wind blew the smoke and ashes toward the mainland and fanned the flames. The heat was finally too much for the lighthouse. The cracks deepened, and the tower crumbled, imploding on itself in a pile of charred white blocks and burning boards. "Nothing left," Maya said. The way she said it, I got the feeling she was talking about more than the buildings. I put my hand on her belly. Normally this irritated her, another sign of my constant worry, but this time I think she realized that I was doing it for a different reason. I needed reassurance, not that the baby was all right, but that I was. She put her hands over mine. "I felt him kick a minute ago."
"You didn't tell me that."
"You were busy almost getting killed."
"That's no excuse. I'm always busy almost getting killed."
She shrugged, conceding the point. One of the Coast Guard guys came up and offered us granola bars and water, but neither of us was hungry.
"An EMT is en route, ma'am."
He looked nervously at Maya's belly. I figured it would probably make his day if he had to assist in childbirth. We thanked him, and as soon as he was sure that Maya was not going to start labor immediately, he nodded and moved off with visible relief.
"The police won't have much of a crime scene," I said.
Maya nodded. "What will you tell them about Lindy?" The old man was sitting at the top of a sand dune, staring out at the sea. His white hair was blown the wrong way, like a frosty wave. His expression was empty. I imagined he could turn to stone up there and no one would know the difference. I wondered if Lindy might go free for killing Alex Huff. The crime scene, the body, the evidence would be hard to use. Not impossible, but it would take an act of will to bring charges against a well-known local attorney and make them stick. I wondered what the D.A., Peter Brassus, would think of all this.
"I'll tell the truth,"
I told Maya. Not sure it will do any good.
Lindy wants to be punished.
Maya was sizing the old man up, the way I'd seen her do many times with clients.
It fits with his idea of right and wrong.
Some system.
Everybody needs closure, she replied. This is his. He'll want people to know he took his revenge. He succeeded.
He succeeded. I remembered Alex's attitude in the lighthouse. Fatalistic, resigned. But also denying he was a killer. I didn't kill Rachel. It may have been his shot nerves, the cumulative effect of years of a double life that made him sound so convincing, but his denial bothered me. I looked down the beach where Marky was talking with the boat captain, telling survivor stories. Ty stood to one side, calmly eating a granola bar. Chase was sitting in the boat like a kid ready to go home. He had an orange blanket around his shoulders, though the sun was rapidly warming things up. When he met my eyes, he asked me a silent, anxious question. Will you tell the police about the drug running? His weekend of panic behind him really was starting to sink in. He was beginning to realize that he might go to jail, or worse. Garrett and Lane were talking nearby in the shade of the washed-up oil tank. Lane was sitting on her suitcase, Garrett in his chair. They were holding hands. The waves washed the beach. The fires seemed to be burning out. Soon, Rebel Island would be just another sandy dot along the Gulf Coast. No distinguishing features, its stubborn landmarks finally scoured off the map. Something was wrong. It took me a minute to think what. Where are Jose and Imelda? I asked. I stood. Maya's face turned pale.
You don't think they were inside?
I looked at the burning wreckage of the hotel and the crumbling tower. I'll be back. Maya asked where I was going. There was, she reminded me, no place left to go. Almost no place, I agreed. And I headed toward the ruins. The Coast Guard guys paid me no attention. They were making no effort to contain people or keep us separated the way any cop would know to do in a crime scene. These guys were first responders. Their job was to rescue us, feed us, not interrogate us. That was just as well. At this point, no amount of investigation was going to bring justice. I imagined Benjamin Lindy would say the same thing. I walked around the side of the hotel. The path was still there, in places. Gravel and paving stones blown with wet sand in a tortoiseshell pattern. I made my way past a burning tree trunk, a broken rowboat oar, a spray of sodden clothing half buried in the sand. Gnats wove a hazy cloud above the seagrass. Sand fleas had survived, too. They were delighted to find my legs, fresh meat walking through their territory. The heat of the building was not as intense now. I could walk next to it without feeling like my shirt would combust. My legs still felt like it would collapse on me any minute, but I managed to hobble over the rise and down the other side of the island. The boathouse was the only structure still standing, though ashes had settled on its blue shingled roof along with an odd assortment of other flotsam, a few dead fish, some seaweed, and part of a shrimper's net. The door was open. Jose was standing in the doorway, watching me approach, as if he'd been waiting. He'd changed clothes. He wore jeans and a red beach shirt and sandals that all reminded me uncomfortably of Alex Huff's wardrobe. As I got closer, I realized it was Alex Huff's wardrobe. "Is Imelda all right?" I asked. Jose considered for a moment, then gestured inside the boathouse. "The Coast Guard's here," I said. "Yes, I saw them." His eyes drifted up toward the hotel. "Did you find Mr. Huff?" "We found him."
"Was he..."
He faltered as Imelda came up behind him. She, too, had changed clothes, a simple gray cotton dress. Her hair was pulled back, and her face looked older in the sunlight, her wrinkles deeper, her eyes sunken and pale.
"Señor," she said, "is... Is your wife all right?
She got out before the explosion, I said. Barely. Imelda's shoulders relaxed a little.
I am glad.
You two made it out as well, I noticed.
We were lucky, Jose said.
I noticed the senora was gone, no doubt burned up with the linens and the kitchenware and the dead bodies. The police will be here soon, I told them. They'll hear the story of Calavera. I think we should talk before they get here. I nodded toward the doorway. Jose regarded me, then said reluctantly,
Yes, perhaps we should.
Inside the boathouse, Jose and Imelda's possessions were stacked neatly against one wall. Two battered suitcases, a few cardboard moving boxes spotted from the rain, a garment bag full of clothes.
Lucky, I said. You just had time to pack everything you own and move it out here.
Imelda twisted the top button on her dress. She backed up, looking for a place to sit down, but there wasn't much. Just the fishing boat, half submerged on its side in the slip, a few piles of ropes, a bait bucket. The water in the slip sloshed angrily. The doors had come loose. One banged back and forth against the other, showing snapshots of the gray sea outside.
Imelda said, Senor, we didn't...
Imelda was upset, Jose interrupted. I told her I would move our things.
Makes sense, I said, since you knew the house would blow up. Jose's expression was as calm as a career gambler's.
Senor?
You did have the key to the lighthouse. You just didn't want me getting in there and finding Alex.
He shook his head. Why would I do that?
Maybe because Imelda was upset. Killing Jesse Longoria to protect your identity was one thing. Killing Chris Stowall, even. You never trusted him, but Alex was a friend. He helped you, gave you refuge. I don't think Imelda wanted him killed, so you stashed him away in the lighthouse instead, doped up and drunk until you took care of the rest of us.
Imelda was watching her husband intently, as if she expected him to do something amazing, combust into flames or start speaking in tongues.
Mr. Hoff was kind to us, Jose said.
Very kind, I agreed, and trusting. He gave you freedom to do whatever you wanted. You set up shop right under his nose in room 102. You were running the hotel, the two of you, until Chris Stowall came on board. After the Brassos hit went wrong, Chris found that email and realized Calavera was at the hotel. But he thought it was Alex. He saw it as a money-making opportunity and got Longoria and Benjamin Lindy involved. You realized what Longoria was here for right away. You confronted him and killed him. Then you gave Chris Stowall the same treatment. Alex didn't know what was going on. He only began to suspect when he found the bomb room. But even then, he wasn't sure who to blame. I imagine you directed his suspicions toward Chris Stowall.
Mr. Hoff told you all this?
No. He's dead. Imelda cupped her hands to her face.
He tried to take Benjamin Lindy's gun away, rather than throw the blame on you, I said.
He died without giving you away. He was still willing to believe you were innocent.
Don't say any more.
Jose's voice was tight. Don't stir up more trouble.
You were an assassin in Mexico. You worked for the cartels down there. You knew explosives.
He didn't answer. Then your family became a target, I said.
Your children were killed, but it wasn't random violence. They died because someone was getting back at you. You left Nuevo Laredo, and you found your way here. Maybe you tried to go straight, but you had lots of anger. You had skills that were going to waste. And you had Alex, who trusted you implicitly, and had a background similar enough to yours, working with explosives. A perfect fall guy, should you need one. It wasn't long before you were rebuilding yourself a new career as Calavera.
Imelda started talking to him in rapid Spanish. I could hardly follow. She said she told him 1,000 times he had taken things too far. He should never have gone back to his old work. He raised his hand, and she fell silent instantly. I got the feeling she'd had a lot of practice at this over the years. She had learned to hold back, to fear her husband when he raised his hand like that. Jose's face, which I'd thought of as made for smiling, now had the sharpness of a knife.
"I did what I needed to," he said, "for Imelda and for me."
"Because of money? You took the drug payoff away from the college kids. Easy to do when you've got the keys to their rooms. I imagine you've got a lot more stashed away. Is Chris Stowall's 20 grand in one of those boxes?"
"Even before that, we had enough to go anywhere."
"Then why didn't you leave?"
He glanced at his wife. "Leaving anywhere is difficult. Huff was your family. This place was all you had. You messed that up when you murdered Peter Brassus' family."
"An accident. But you didn't contact the Marshals Service yourself. You've got no remorse."
"No. Alex, then, I guessed."
The Brassos killings were more than he could take. He contacted the Marshals Service, pretending to be Calavera. He was going to turn you in. Or maybe you made him think Chris was the killer.
"No," Jose said, "you do not understand. It was not Mr. Hoff. The person who wished to turn me in was my wife."
"You should have gone along,"
Imelda said softly.
"For what?" he asked. "You would loose me too? Is that what you want?"
"No, mi amor. I do not want to lose you."
"You already have, Imelda," I told her. "Your husband kills people. It's how he deals with his anger, keeps it in check. That's why he chooses explosives instead of guns. The timer, the sense of control, the complete destruction of someone's household. That has a lot of appeal to you, doesn't it, Jose?" His eyes were steely, but I doubted I could make him lose his cool. Jose was not the type. He wanted to be the master, the timer. He would kill in his own way.
"People die," Jose said. "My children died before my eyes. Why should other lives matter to me? Why should I not choose the time and the way? I'm good at it."
"But you made mistakes," he shrugged.
"That's over now. I will not make any deals. I will not apologize.
Jose," Imelda said,
"you will stay with me," he told her, "as you promised. I will take care of you. It will be all right."
"No, it won't," I said. "The boathouse is a dead end, Jose." Then he surprised me. He did another calculation, came to a decision I didn't anticipate. He took out a gun, the same .38 I imagined that had killed Jesse Longoria, and he aimed it at my chest.
Chapter 42. Maya tried to stay put, but it wasn't something she did well. She couldn't shake the feeling that Imelda had been trying to tell her something earlier. She told herself it didn't matter now. Help had arrived. They'd head home and Maya would never see this place again. Trace would be right back with good news or bad. The worst was over. But it was hard to believe that. Maya had a tingling feeling between her shoulder blades that usually meant something was wrong. The far end of the island was hidden behind the rubble of the hotel and clouds of smoke. She knew Trace had gone to the boathouse, but she'd never seen it and didn't know exactly how far it was. Damn him for running off. He was in worse shape than she was, for God's sake. A shadow fell over her.
"You sure I can't get you anything, ma'am?"
It was one of the Coast Guardsmen. He reminded her of Chris Stowall, young, blonde, a little nervous. Then she remembered Chris Stowall was burned to ashes inside the hotel.
"Could you help me up?" she asked.
He looked a little flustered, but he took her hand and helped her to her feet. It was difficult to do this with dignity. She felt as if she was carrying a bowling ball around her middle, but she did her best.
"I'm going for a walk," she announced. over that way.
The guardsman frowned. You sure that's a good idea?
No, Maya answered. It's probably not.
And she began walking toward the boathouse. Chapter 43.
No,
Imelda said. Jose hesitated. I hoped he was having second thoughts. It's a different thing killing a man while you're looking him in the eyes. On the other hand, Jose had shot Jesse Longoria in the chest. He'd bludgeoned Chris Stowall to death and stuffed his body in a freezer. I doubted my boyish charm was going to keep him from pulling the trigger. They'll hear the shot, I said, trying to sound reasonable. They'll find me dead and know you killed me. You can't cover that up. I could tell his mind was chewing on that, coming up with solutions. I didn't want to give him time. Imelda, I said, do you want to stay with him?
Of course.
No hesitation, but her voice was full of despair, as if I were asking her whether she'd like to walk on the moon. Tell him, I said. His only chance is surrender. The doors of the boathouse slapped shut and creaked open with a gust of wind. A curl of seawater sloshed over the concrete and doused my shoes.
You'll go in the water, Jose decided. Get in.
No, Jose, I said. It's over.
No more planning, no more hits.
Your body will be underwater, he said, under the boat. They'll find it eventually, but not for a while.
We'll be gone by then. Imelda was shivering. I needed her help. She was the only possible leverage I could use to make Jose change his mind. But I also couldn't wait for her. I was out of options. I was weighing the odds of attacking when the worst possible variable got added to the equation. The boathouse door opened, and Maya walked in.
Ah, she said, I caught you at a bad time.
I locked eyes with her, and I told her silently to go. Not surprisingly, she did the exact opposite. She came to stand next to me and took my hand.
I got worried.
Senora.
Imelda's voice trembled.
You shouldn't be on your feet.
Her voice trailed off. I suppose she realized the futility of what she was saying, given the fact that her husband was planning to put a bullet in me. As for Jose, he looked like a juggler who'd been thrown too many plates, his forehead beaded with sweat.
Hello, Jose, Maya said. Do you mind if I sit down?
She didn't wait for him to answer. She pulled up an empty ice chest and sat down as best she could, holding my hand for support. I was beyond worried. I was ready to unzip my own skin and run screaming into the sand dunes. I wanted, by sheer force of will, to make Jose and his gun disappear off the face of the earth.
You remember when Imelda was pregnant?
Maya asked him. We might have been at a dinner among friends. Her tone was maddeningly casual. Jose stared at her. I was sure he was going to shoot us, but finally he said, I remember. Imelda closed her eyes. A tear traced its way down her cheek.
Why did you come? Jose murmured. I'll have to kill you both now.
The third trimester is brutal, Maya said. But sometimes you feel the baby move, and there's nothing like it in the world. Did you put your hand on Imelda's belly and feel that? Did you speak to your babies before they were born?
We need time to get away.
Jose's voice sounded ragged, almost apologetic.
We can't have anyone tell.
Let them go,
Imelda begged. Jose shook his head. He watched as Maya placed her hand on her belly.
There it is,
Maya said.
A kick.
Her smile was as astonishing as the storm, or the way the lighthouse had crumbled after 150 years.
The killings didn't stop the hurt, did they?
Maya asked. Jose didn't answer. Imelda knelt at his side.
Please, mi amor, don't.
She tried to take his gun. He raised it so she couldn't, but he didn't push her away either.
Imelda knew what she was doing, Maya said. After those girls and their mother died, there really wasn't anything for you to do except turn yourself in. You'd arrived right back where you started. Pain, grief, the death of children.
It wasn't my fault, Jose said.
Perhaps the death of your children wasn't your fault, Maya said. Everything you've done since then is...
A new sound cut through the surf. It sounded like a small engine, something fast. Too soon for civilian watercraft to be back on the waves. Police, perhaps, or a water ambulance.
We can't get away if you live, Jose said.
You'd have to kill us, Maya agreed. You were prepared to do that last night. You planned on destroying the entire hotel, hoping everyone would be in it. Was it hard, knowing that would include a family, an unborn child?
I told you to get out. I tried. It would have been all right if you hadn't come here. Alex
would have taken the blame as Calavera, I said. Even in the end, he didn't give you up. He would have let you go. Despite everything, he cared about you, too. He believed everyone on this island deserved a chance. Jose shook his head. His eyes were red now.
You'd have to kill us, Maya said. But that would be the wrong choice, Jose. It would be starting all over again.
She made it sound so sensible. All I could see was the gun and a distraught killer. I'd been here before. The odds were terrible. I'd seen too many people die. Everything I'd seen in my life told me that I had only one chance, to overpower Jose. But Maya held my hand, gently restraining me. Maya's voice was calm, confident.
Mi amor, Imelda said. You would have to kill me too. I can't go through this, please. No more.
Jose focused on her, as if seeing her for the first time. She held out her hand. Jose's jaw tightened. His eyes were as turbulent as the water in the slip. He pointed the gun at his wife's chest. Then he crumpled, kneeling next to her while she held his head against her breast. And he let out a sob that had been trapped inside him since the death of his children. For a long time, the four of us sat in the boathouse. The only sounds were the waves against the hull of the sunken boat and the crackle of the fires dying on the hill. Chapter 44 Imelda waited for someone to confront her, but no one did. They treated her like a sick child, someone to be checked on occasionally, spoken to gently, sheltered from the others in case she was contagious. Jose was taken from her, a last kiss, and he whispered in her ear, "Say nothing." His only wish, to protect her from what she had done. She sat on a tarp and wrapped herself in a shawl that smelled faintly of candles and altar incense. She thought about the day Peter Brassus had visited the island. He had questioned Senor Hoff, yes, but mostly he had questioned her. The lawyer's eyes had been like a falcon's, dark and without mercy.
I know Jose was involved. Tell me how, and you could save him.
She had no idea how Brassus found them. A confession from someone, a deal to betray Jose. They'd been so careful, and yet someone knew who they were. After their children were murdered in Laredo, they'd moved north, hoping to escape. Jose promised to stop working for the drug lords, but he still built his devices, still used the workroom Senor Hoff had given him to plan occasional jobs. Bomb-making was in his blood like a drug. He couldn't leave it behind completely. After Peter Brassus found them, she told Jose what they must do. She located his home in Corpus Christi, his other house in Port Aransas.
We should run, Jose told her. We have enough money. But Imelda had run too many times. She loved Rebel Island. She wanted to grow old here with Jose, tending the hotel rooms, listening to the ocean. When she thought of Peter Brassus threatening to take her husband away from her, her hands trembled. She lit a candle at the altar of her dead children and made a promise. If you will not, she told Jose, I will. In the end, he'd relented. But it had been her idea, her murder. The wife and children. If Imelda hadn't pushed Jose, if she'd given him time to plan. Imelda had been coming out of the grocery store in Port Aransas when she heard two men talking about the explosion, the mother and the two little girls. Imelda's knees turned to water. She collapsed in front of the IGA and her grocery bag split, oranges and soup cans rolling through the parking lot. The men had tried to help her, but she ran. She didn't stop until she found a payphone and called Jose. They waited for Peter Brassus to revisit the island with an army of police. But nothing happened. At first, Imelda didn't understand why. Then she realized she had misjudged. Brassus knew less than he let on. He had no idea Jose was Calavera. He'd simply been pushing on them as one of many leads to get at his targets in court. Brassus' wife and children had died for nothing. Something had broken inside Jose when he learned about the little girls. He wandered the hotel at night, muttering the names of his victims, the dates of his kills. He believed the police would come for them eventually. Or worse, the drug lords. They'd resent Calavera's botched, unauthorized assassination. It had caused them too much grief. Jose made a plan. He'd negotiate with the American Marshals Service, exchange information for immunity. Imelda pleaded with him not to, but Jose wouldn't listen. It is the only way to save ourselves, he told her. They'll find us otherwise, wherever we run. The marshal, Jesse Longoria, had arrived, but he did not want to negotiate, and everything had spiraled out of control. Imelda watched another boat full of police come ashore. They brought black plastic cases, yellow tarps, and cameras. They joked easily with one another, offering drinks from coolers as if they'd come for a day on the beach. Señora Navarre was talking to one of them. Her hands were cupped around a coffee mug. The señora's eyes caught hers, and an electric charge passed through Imelda. The señora paused in her conversation. She fixed Imelda with a strange look, almost like pity. Then she turned her attention back to the policeman. She didn't look at Imelda again. She knows, Imelda realized. And yet, Señora Navarre would not tell the police. Imelda wasn't sure how she knew this or why the señora would keep silent, but she sensed it was true. Imelda clenched a handful of sand. She was free, but she would never see Jose again. She had the blood of children on her hands. I will pay the price, Jose had told her. You must not. Please. You are all I have. Please, my love. Let me do this. She wrapped her shawl around her. She would pay a price, only a different price than Jose. The world would be her prison until she answered before God. She'd go back to her cousins in Corpus Christi. From there, she didn't know. She'd find a new job, something to help people. She would add 3 candles to her altar and pray for the family she had destroyed. Suddenly, she understood Señora Navarre's look of pity. Imelda needed no more punishment. She would live alone with her ghosts and her altar, struggling to make amends, knowing it would never be enough. The police could do nothing worse to her than that. Señora Navarre understood, as only a mother could. A pilot fish jumped from the water, a silver spark like a camera flash. Imelda watched for it again, but the waves turned gray and empty. She would have to settle for that single splash, a tiny sign that the sea might come back to life. Chapter 45. I had some idea how the Taino Indians must have felt when Columbus and his men rowed ashore. The three Coast Guard guys were only the beginning. An ambulance boat arrived next, followed by the Aransas Sheriff's Department, followed by the ferry filled with FBI agents and marshals and FEMA personnel. By the afternoon, the island was overrun by strangers. White tents were set up on the beach. Forensics teams combed the wreckage of the hotel. Three bodies were found, photographed, bagged, and removed. Jose and Imelda were separated from the rest of us, led away somewhere. I never saw them leave the island. I had a series of interviews, most of which I wouldn't remember later. Maya was checked out by a doctor. Some interviews we had to do separately, some we got to do together. I ate a donut and drank a cup of tepid orange juice. Later on, a homicide detective from Corpus Christi gave me a chicken sandwich. He told me something that had happened to him once at a barbecue for Peter Brassus. I don't remember the story or why he felt he needed to confide in me. It's strange how that happens. Being a witness, a victim, a participant in some terrible event seems to give you some of the qualities of a priest confessor. Instead of people comforting you, people look to you for comfort and understanding, as if you, by virtue of your trials, have gained some insight the rest of the world sorely needs, a capacity to endure. Or maybe the guy just had a poor sense of social etiquette. I wasn't in much frame of mind to judge. A medic who didn't know better told me all the gossip. Jose had given a full confession to the police. He'd claimed responsibility for the murders of Jesse Longoria and Chris Stowall. He had cleared his wife of any knowledge or guilt. Imelda, I suspected, would go free. That was the only condition Jose demanded in exchange for telling the FBI all about his employers during the time he worked assassinations. Strangely, Imelda's dream of relocation under a new name would most likely become a reality. She and Jose would disappear, but they would not be together. Jose would be in prison somewhere, and Imelda, I didn't know where she'd go. She'd be swept out of our lives and gone. Benjamin Lindy had collapsed shortly after hearing about Jose's confession. The medic told me Lindy was suffering from exhaustion, emotional fatigue. The smallest shock can be a big thing when you're 80 years old, and the past 24 hours on Rebel Island had been more than a small shock. I'd given a statement about Lindy shooting Alex Huff, but I doubted it would make much difference. The crisis had already broken Lindy. He'd killed the wrong man. Now he'd have to watch as the right man slipped out of his grasp, the very thing he tried so desperately to avoid. God had done a much better job punishing Benjamin Lindy for his deeds than the courts could ever do. As for the UT boys, Ty, Chase, and Markey had been questioned and released. Ty was given a sedative. The other two had been given sprites and chicken sandwiches and told to please go away. They were the first to leave the island. I watched them go, and they stared at me nervously from the back of the police boat. I had no desire to tell on their little drug-smuggling problem. They'd have enough to deal with when they got back. I'd neither help them nor bust them. They weren't kids after all, I decided. They'd figure out a solution, or go to the police, or face some gruesome consequences. It was their problem, not mine. That left Lane and Garrett, a situation which was not so easy to put on a boat and forget about. They were sitting in front of the police tent after their interviews. Garrett's chair had been cleaned up. He had, too.
He'd managed to wash the soot off his face and pull a fresh Hawaiian shirt out of his luggage. Lane was sipping coffee, watching the sun go down. The sunset made her face look healthier, her eyes brighter. Garrett acknowledged me with a brief nod as I sat on the canvas tarp next to him.
"It's just now sinking in, little bro. I can't believe Alex is gone. He was something."
Garrett drank his beer. The smell of Lane's coffee drifted by and was blown away by the sea breeze. "We can leave soon," I said. "The ferry should be here in half an hour." Garrett shook his head.
"I'm not going just yet. I need some time to think about the island."
"What do you mean?" I asked. He locked eyes with me.
"Alex left it to me."
I stared at him. I tried to wrap my mind around what he was saying.
"You mean Rebel Island?" "The papers he gave me last night," Garrett said. "That was his will. He said if anything happened to him, he wanted me to know. He was leaving the place to me. He named you executor."
"Me?" Garrett looked back at the smoldering wreckage.
"Congratulations."
Part of me wondered why Alex would do such a thing. It would make Garrett a suspect. He'd have a strong motive for threatening Alex's life. But Alex had never thought that way. He hadn't been a killer. Just a lonely man who tried to live up to Mr. Eli's trust.
After all this, coming here to say goodbye to Rebel Island, my brother had ended up owning it. There was a lesson there somewhere, one of life's little ironies, but I wasn't sure how to take it.
"What do you do with the place?" My tone probably said what I was thinking. "Why would you want it?"
"Do with it?"
Garrett looked out at the sea and breathed in, as if clearing the smoke of the ruins out of his lungs.
"Don't know. Maybe a smaller house, maybe nothing at all. But I like being here."
"And you?" I asked Lane.
"I'll stay the night with Garrett," she answered. "They're leaving the tents up until morning. Then I'm going back to the mainland."
"What about your ex-husband?"
"I'll confront him," she said, "and bring charges."
"If you want help," she shook her head.
"I appreciate it. But I'll tell you the same thing I told Garrett. I have to do this myself."
She looked nothing like the crying lady she'd been at the start of the weekend. I wondered if she was just putting on a brave face, if she'd crumble again in the presence of danger. But something told me she wouldn't. She'd left her fear behind in the burning hotel, along with most of her luggage, the last reminders of her failed marriage.
"You'll bring the police," I said.
She smiled ruefully.
"I'm not stupid."
"And when she's done," Garrett said, "whenever that is, she might come back here."
"I might," she agreed.
It was tenuous as the idea that my brother could ever live on this island, or ever have a relationship for that matter. But at the moment, Lane and he were holding hands. They seemed at peace. And they really didn't need my presence.
"Good luck," I said.
I shook my brother's hand, told Lane goodbye, and walked away toward the ruins of the ferry dock.
"You weren't even arrested," Maya observed, "much less killed."
"Yeah," I agreed. "Kind of disappointing." We watched from the ferry's stern as Rebel Island receded into the distance. The sunset made a blood-red sky and a copper bay. Without its hotel or lighthouse or palmetto trees, Rebel Island looked like nothing much, a sandbar, a trick of the light, a shallow break where Jean Lafitte might run a Spanish ship aground, the kind of island that vanished in the space of a breath. And yet, it was still there. It probably looked more now like it did 300 years ago, when Cabeza de Vaca was shipwrecked nearby and hunted for lizards with the locals. The ferry rose and fell on the waves.
"According to the EMT," Maya said, "I'm due any minute.
He was amazed the baby held out through the weekend.
"Tough kid," I said. She kissed me.
"Tough parents."
We watched the island disappear. It didn't feel like the final goodbye I'd imagined. If the island really was Garrett's now, I might be forced to come back some day. But that didn't bother me. I wasn't so much worried about the things I was leaving behind. I was more interested in what I was going back to.
"I might take a PI case once in a while," I said, "if the right one came."
Maya raised an eyebrow.
"If it didn't interfere."
"It would depend on the case," I said.
"Oh, naturally."
She tried to hold a poker face as long as possible, but finally a smile made its way to the surface.
"You almost made it 7 months. Not bad."
"Oh, be quiet."
"Hey, when we broke up, you stayed away from me a whole year. Should I be insulted?"
"I shouldn't have brought this up until we were closer to the shore. 20 minutes trapped on this ferry with you. Gonna be a long ride."
She kissed me again.
Between us, the baby kicked. It felt like a tiny reminder.
The kid telling me, "Get a grip, Dad."
"Not such a long trip," Maya promised. "Tell me what you want to do first when we get home."
And so we sat together in the stern of the ferry, and we talked about the future.
The End. You've been listening to Rebel Island by Rick Riordan, narrated by Tom Stecciotti and directed by Jane Kramer. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.